See, I've been waiting. Waiting on that time. Feel me if you've been waiting on yours. That moment, it's close. It's close.
Yeah. Tired of living day to day like everything's alright. Just waiting on that moment. Waiting on my moment.
And that time is now, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Fighter's Block. My name is Joe Gilpin, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Jesse Rivas. How are you doing this week, Jesse?
You know what? Did you get the text message I sent you right before the show started?
The one with the dame with the gams?
I have no idea what that means.
The one with the bitch?
The what?
The one with the lady.
Okay, okay. So what were your thoughts? You never answered the text. What was your thoughts of that lady?
Yeah, Jesse, you sent me a photo of some, like, I'm assuming Asian woman, very heavily makeuped. My thoughts to her, you sent me this text and you added the phrase, what are your thoughts? My thoughts about what? What about her?
I mean, what do you think? Like, you know, would you hit it? I mean, do you think she's cute? What do you think?
I don't know. What do you think? I don't know her. You know her. Don't look to your boys for recognition.
Just based on the picture.
You're not having sex with her to impress me. You're not having sex with her to impress me. It's a man, correct?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. 1,000% of men. Did you know that or did you guess that?
No, I knew that. I can see. I know what a trans woman looks like. It's a trans woman. Yeah. Fucking coming up in here trying to get me.
So,
trying to double trick me. Get the fuck off the porch.
You're the first person to guess this.
Am I really?
You're the first person to guess that. You did a fantastic. Yes. Everybody else was like, dude, I would totally hit that. And I was like, oh, it's a guy. His name is Anthony.
Too smart for that, baby. Not up in here. I saw that coming. For sure that was a man. Come on.
So I get hit up on social media very aggressively, so much to the point where I'm like, yo, is this person trying to rob me? Like, what are they doing? So I end up hitting mutual friends, find out, oh, no, it's just a trans woman. But it led me to believe, like, yo, they're making some fantastic work nowadays.
They are, man.
Because I literally showed it to – I showed it to so many guys, and they all were tricked until I told them at the very end. I was waiting to hear the reactions. It's been my favorite game of the day.
And I fucking won the game, motherfuckers. Fuck out of here. I will say, though, like,
speaking of Thailand, if it's I'm sorry.
But I'll say, like, no, yeah, that's a good thing. But also, and this is not my joke, this is somebody else's joke. If somebody used to be a man, then they're a woman now. It's don't fucking sweat it. If they used to be a man, everybody used to be a child. That doesn't make you a pedophile for sleeping with a fully grown person. People change. It's part of, you know, I'm not saying we should throw Fallon Fox in the cage with all the ladies, but if you want to fuck a trans woman, fuck a trans woman. I don't care, Jesse. I support you in this. Have fun with her. Have a good time.
There will be no sleeping with trans women, but that's just know that if you get aggressively hit on the way a guy hits on a lady, it's because it was originally a guy. Women don't hit on men that way.
No, for sure. But El Gallo Estrada hit up on Sisaket Sarongvisai all night long.
Great transition.
Thank you.
Using the word transition feels weird now, speaking about a Thai guy.
No, we're just going to transition into talking about two guys hitting each other from different positions and in ways we never expected. Sisaket Sarongvisai went trans on Saturday night, Jesse, because he went orthodox. He's been a southpaw fighter his entire career, and for some reason this is a guy who fights bums like every 3 weeks, but for them those bums get the A game. If he wants to try something new and wacky, for sure save it for a top 10, top 15 pound for pound kind of guy in El Gallo Estrada, who picks up the win and picks up the championships. El Gallo is the man at this weight class now, and probably a top 10 pound for pound guy.
What an amazing rise to the championship. He had kind of always been in the shadow of Chocolatito Gonzalez. People have always wanted to see him build up that rematch of that great fight that they had back in 2014. And this was something where it was similar to the Pacquiao versus Marquez rematch, where Pacquiao had the bigger fame in terms of his rise to the top. But in those weight classes, the tougher competition was being won by Marquez in almost obscurity. Same thing that we have now with Gaio Estrada. And the fact that he finally got his big marquee win when the lights were on, you couldn't be happier for the guy. But do you feel like it was a bit of Gaio Estrada finally winning the big one? Or do you think Sissoket seemed a little bit off in this fight?
I mean, Sissoket definitely didn't have the offense we're used to. But now the question becomes, is that because of something El Gallo was doing, right? Was that because Gaio Estrada was shutting him down in the same way that, like, you know, like John Jones shut somebody down, or like, you know, Floyd Mayweather, for a better example, will shut somebody down with his defensive skills? Or was it that Sissoket just wasn't opening up and was having trouble pulling the trigger? He definitely didn't look like himself, and for sure we need a third fight, right? It's got to be a fight.
There's got to be a trilogy. I mean, the first fight was fantastic. The second fight, something seemed off.
Was good. It was a good fight, but it wasn't a great fight.
Yeah, I still thought one of the things leading into the fight was the problems that Sarong Desai was having with his girlfriend.
It turns out she's trans. Nobody knew. Turns out she's a trans woman. She's been switch hitting, so he gets in the race. I guess I'll switch hit too while I'm fucking here. If I'm a fucking switch hitter, I'm a fucking switch hitter. And for the first,
they do fantastic work in that country.
They really do. And for the first like 4 or 5 rounds, Sissoket boxes from that right-handed stance, gets ate up. He's in a big hole. All due respect to his girlfriend, and he has to work himself out of it, and he ends up way behind on the cards. Gaio, you know, kind of cruises the last half of that fight, to be not half, but the last round or two. You know, he was definitely, he knew he was in control and he just needed to maintain. And yeah, I'm fucking thrilled for the guy. He should have had a rematch against Chocolatito for a long time. Never got it. Never got his chance back on top. Here he got it. Almost beat Sissoket in the first fight. Turned in a fight of the year performance. Deserved the rematch. Got the rematch. Capitalized on the rematch. Fuck yeah. Good for Gaio.
Great for him. I can't wait to see him going forward. I would love to see him fight against maybe like a Jerwin and Cajas or a just move up in weight, because he's still a very young guy. I think he could still pack on a couple pounds even though he's short.
Man, he does. I don't think he has the body for that, but we'll see. Let's get that trilogy out of the way, and then we'll start talking about other stuff. Jesse, let's stick with these little guys for a second. I want to talk about this. Nonito Donaire comes in to the World Boxing Super Series semifinal. He washes Stefan Young. It was supposed to be Zolani Tete. Tete has to pull out with an injury. It's part of being in a tournament. It just happens. Donaire picks up big highlight reel knockout win. Another one for the fucking highlight reel. Nonito Donaire has a highlight reel that's second to none of anybody active right now, really. You know, maybe like, you know, like a Triple G, or maybe like a Canelo or somebody has a nicer one. Deontay, maybe. Nonito is one of the best knockout artists going. He picks up another one over Stephen Young. He's in the World Boxing Super Series. Presumably, he's going to see Inoue, who still has to win his semifinal. But looks like we're setting up for Nonito Donaire Inoue here, Jesse.
Wow, this could be the biggest comeback in modern boxing history. To see a guy that 10 years ago fell off from the pound-for-pound list to be in the finals of the World Boxing Super Series against all odds is nothing short of phenomenal. I mean, given Tete pulled out and he kind of cruised here and he pulled that kind of awkward victory in the first round. But if he were to pull a Mark Coleman type upset in the main event, that'll be huge. That's comeback of the year. First ballot.
It could end up being like a Solita Lomachenko thing, where maybe, you know, a guy doesn't have the same pop as the younger, more polished athlete, like Inoue, who's expected to come in there and just wash him. But with those old savvy veteran tricks, making the fight ugly, cheating a little bit, you know, putting your little stamps on where you need to, Nonito can make that a very interesting fight. He has way more experience than Inoue is, and I have a lot of respect for Inoue. But we'll see what that fight ends up being. But Nonito Donaire right now, you got to feel awesome for the guy. Probably the comeback fighter of the year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For sure. And one of the breakout fighters of the year, Jesse, Regis Prograis. He came in and he whooped up on Kirill Relic in a fight. I wasn't expecting it to be a total domination like this. Regis Prograis looked out of his mind good in this fight. He's struggled once or twice, but here at 140, he looks like the guy now. Now that guys like Crawford are gone, Regis Prograis looks like the guy.
Yeah, this is fantastic. I said it was going to be a coronation coming into this fight because for as much hype and as much respect as Prograis came in coming into this fight, he actually wasn't the champion. He actually has never been champion. This was his world championship victory, but it was almost considered just like, you know,
it was standard, right? It was what was supposed to happen. Like, yeah.
Usually in the movie, when the fighter fights for the title, it's like this big build up and it's a big thing. You know, going into this fight, it was like, weren't you already the champion? So it's going to be great to see him in the next level of this tournament. I think this was a fantastic weekend for DAZN because they stacked the boxing with the Bellator. And man, if there was a week to buy DAZN, it was this week.
Straight up, there's still, I would recommend going back and checking out a ton of these fights. Check out what Regis Prograis did. Check out Sisket Nagayo. Check out Nonito Donaire's knockout win. Do not check out this next one. Jesse, please talk about this next fight while I sneeze. I'm allergic to this fight. That's what's happening. I can't even talk about it. I start to get sniffles and sneezes and allergic and bumps. Jesse, this is one of the worst fights I've ever seen in my fucking life. I tried to watch the highlights. They were 2 seconds long. There are no highlights, Jesse. I tried to watch the highlights. It was just the entrance. This fight was bullshit. Robert Easter and Rancis Bartholomew, both guys fought not to lose, so they both got their wish. And it ended in a split draw. What do you think?
I think this fight was a great example of a fighter being worse than we expected him to be in Robert Easter. We talked about that last week about this is great matchmaking. This is a prospect who didn't necessarily live up to the hype, but they're at least building him up properly with a fight that's tailor-made for him. Rancis used to be a great fighter, but he's fallen off enough and hasn't produced the amount of losses yet to make him considered washed up in the general public. So it was a good fight at the good time. He actually performed worse than expected. And, you know, for being as tall...
He didn't perform! He didn't perform! He couldn't get his dick up to do anything! Let alone blow the back walls out, Jesse. This was flaccid. That's what the word is. This was flaccid. Horrible stuff.
I think it was more of a case of Robert Easter not looking good than... Rancis was there... Basically, he was pawing at his hand, kind of. He was there, like, just trying not to lose, just to make it tricky, and giving him any reason just to win this unanimous decision. But even that, Robert wasn't going for. So, yeah, no, this is a very horrible fight. And I think we've already done it more justice than we needed to.
I agree. Jacare fought this weekend, Jesse, in what might be his last fight in the prime time. He fought Jack Hermansson, a very tough Swedish fighter. Hermansson is trying to be that new Alexander Gustafsson guy as Gustafsson winds down, the new Swedish sensation. Hermansson picks up a 5-round unanimous decision, just outworks Jacare. His wrestling looks great. Jacare is never able to get him to the ground and do any significant work. Hermansson keeps him standing, outworks him, works him from the clinch, works him with pretty ugly combinations, to be honest, but just very impressive leveling up from Jack Hermansson here.
Yeah, I mean, he could be the next guy. I mean, Europe has been looking for another big star. I mean, they had what was the guy who, like, Kelly Pavlik, who fought against who lost really badly against Cormier.
Not Stipe, obviously, but Ozdemir.
Ozdemir, yeah, Ozdemir. You know, they had Ozdemir. They had. You know, the big Viking guy.
Gustafsson.
So, yeah, they're needing a
Darren Till. They thought it might have been him. Wasn't Darren Till.
I think it still can be Darren Till. No, I think Darren Till's still sucks. In there. But it's different. Like, that's like the other Europe, though. Like, that's like Western Europe. That's like the Ireland. That's the England. That's that Scottish. Like, I feel like that's like a separate Europe. But that other region, that northern region where all the Viking people come from, like they're looking for a guy, that eastern area.
Arctic, you know, that kind of thing. Where, like, yeah. If you don't have a coat in June, you're going to fucking freeze to death. That kind.
Yeah. Like if they barely get a sparkle of light, they just get sunburned.
For sure. Vampire England, or Vampire Europe. So Jack Hermanson in his last four fights has beat some tough guys. He beat Dave Branch, he beat Talis Leites, he beat Gerald Meerschaert, who is a tough guy, and he beat Jacare. A lot of really tough grapplers there. Talis, David Branch, and Jacare are all very good jiu-jitsu black belts. If you're a grappler, I think you got to find a new way to fight this guy. I think that he is just coming in, he is finding that grappler's antidote, because the only guys to beat him really are strikers. Cesar Ferreira beat him up standing, ended up getting a submission on the ground. Thiago Santos knocked him out from the feet. People are beating him from the feet, not from the ground, so I think anybody moving forward has to be very aware of that, which I think is a really interesting dynamic in this division. Jack Hermanson, we're going to see him in a lot of cool stuff moving forward. Jacare, is this a big loss? I feel like this is a really big loss for him, Jesse.
Monster loss. I mean, we're counting down how long he could still go. I mean, he's getting a little bit older.
He's like 40. He's old. This is an old man.
Yeah.
How fucking old is he? I'm going to look it up right now. 39. He will be 40 this year in December, Jesse.
Yeah, we've been watching him for a very, very, very long time. I mean, this is a guy that I remember talking about him back when Dream was out. Do you remember when the Dream promotion was out?
Yo, I do. It was like a decade ago, and he ended up fighting. He was fighting like Mayhem Miller and Gegard Mousasi and shit. You remember
that?
Yeah,
he fought Mousasi in the 2008 Grand Prix. That was a big fight 11 years ago.
He fought Matt Lindland. You know how long Matt Lindland has been retired? Unbelievable. This guy's been there. He's fought so many of the top names over the years, you really don't realize. Just listen to this, Jesse. I'm just going off like pretty good names. Jason Miller, Gegard Mousasi, Matt Lindland, Tim Kennedy, Robbie Lawler, Luke Rockhold, Derek Brunson, Yushin Okami, Gegard Mousasi again, Yoel Romero, Robert Whittaker, Vitor Belfort, Derek Brunson again, Kelvin Gastelum, Chris Weidman. This guy's fought everybody.
Alexander Shlemenko,
did he? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's been crazy, crazy, crazy busy. Jacare might be the end of the line for him. I hope he sticks around and does a few fun fights, like a few, like, legend-style fights. But, man, high hats off to the guy. He has just been an incredible fighter to follow his entire career. Got a little bit of a later start in his MMA career, right? Didn't get here until he was already, like, you know, on the other side of 30. Was the first time he wrapped up those gloves.
I was going to mention that he came here after a full career in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, yeah. And a very successful, very grinding, a career in jiu-jitsu that took a lot from him. And so this isn't even the prime Jacare that we maybe could have seen if he had gone right into MMA, like some people talk about. So that's even scarier. This guy's already so good.
And if you look at his career, he did start his first MMA fight in 2003, but if you look at the rhythm of his record, he really didn't get going seriously with MMA until about 2008.
That sounds about right. That's when the Dream thing started up. By the way, we need to talk about like Hermanson or somebody else at some point. We can't just fucking sit here and slobber off Jacare. Jesse, Jacare started later in his career. Somebody who started fucking super early in his career is Rory McDonald. He's been fighting professionally most of his life at this point, and he's only like 33. He debuted when he was in his mid-teens. He was in the semifinals of the Bellator Welterweight Grand Prix, which has been a very exciting tournament. He fought John Fitch, older contender. This guy, about a decade ago, was number two in the world. Has definitely slowed down a lot since then, but you wouldn't know it from this fight. John Fitch was all over Rory McDonald. And Rory did not look himself. He looked fucking horrible. It ends up after five rounds being a split draw, or a majority draw. Two judges saw it as a draw. One judge saw it for John Fitch. That means, by the rules of the tournament, because it's a draw, the champion, Rory McDonald, who none of the judges thought won the fight, is the one to advance to the semifinals of the tournament. Fucked up.
When did they explain this?
I don't know that they ever did, because I'm not sure that they ever knew that this was going to be, you know, a real possibility. This was news to me as they were reading out the decision and trying to figure out exactly move forward. Because all these fights are five rounds. That's why we saw, like, Neiman Gracie and Ed Ruth went five rounds. Or went to the fourth round, at least. MVP versus Paul Daly was five rounds. It's because these are all supposed to simulate title fights, like this. Because Rory's in this tournament, and every fight that he's in is a title fight, so everybody's in these title fights.
Not for nothing, the 41-year-old John Fitch has actually put together a very good record in the last 4 years. I mean, he goes from beating Jushin Okami to beating Jake Shields to beating Paul Daly to technically, from most people's eyes, beat Rory McDonald. This guy deserves a title shot.
He does, absolutely. He just got one. Unfortunately, he's talking a little bit about retiring because he kind of put himself in a position where he said that, like, the next time I lose, I'm probably going to retire. But he's just been reeling off wins since then. He said with this draw, he's not sure where he stands. He's going to step back and think about it. But John Fitch at 41 is still, you know, obviously capable of fighting at a really high level. But Rory McDonald, after the fight, is talking about how because of his newfound religion, he's like an Episcopalian or some shit, you know, evangelical, some kind of something. He's like one of those like Shiite Catholics. You know what I mean? Like he's really into it. He doesn't want to hurt people. He doesn't want to punch people in the face anymore. And it showed in the fight. And that's a really bad problem to have when you're a fighter, that you don't want to fight people anymore. What do you think about this, Jesse? Should he retire? Should he just step down? If he's openly saying, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be here. I don't have the fighter's drive and fighter's heart anymore. Is it responsible for him to still get in that cage?
You know, whenever I've gone through a breakup, I've kind of followed the general rule of, you know, when you know that it's time, when you're starting to think about like hanging up the gloves, it's probably time to throw in the towel. There's no point in receiving any extra damage. There's no reason to receive any extra pain. Just throw in the towel, walk away. You've agreed that you've lost this fight. And I feel like that's where he is in his career right now. You know, if he's already thinking about not fighting anymore and his morals and his ideas and his religions aren't necessarily matching up with this girl anymore, maybe he should throw in the towel. You know what I'm saying? He needs to leave her now. You know, he's still beautiful. He can still go ahead and do his thing. He's still a young guy. He's 33. He can find somebody else, right?
He's a young guy. He's got that fresh new nose. You know, he got that deviated septum. He's got that fresh new nose from Robbie
Lawler.
He's
Jesus's age.
Yeah, he's in his Jesus year. He needs to get acting on that and stop crucifying himself. I feel for the guy. It's a really tough position to be in. But, man, who you are when you're 16 when he made his professional debut and who you are at 33 are two very different people. And
he's 29, actually.
He's 29 still, man. You know, 13 years difference. You're not the same guy, and that's okay. And maybe one guy was a fighter and one guy wasn't. And as long as he can go and find something else to do, I don't think that that's a bad thing. And if he's ready to step aside, if he's thinking about stepping aside, I'm with you. Fucking get, you know, find a door. Find it quick. If you don't believe me, ask, did you see Babalu put out that interview today?
Oh, yeah.
Where he talks about how he's, you know, having really bad CTE from all these years where, you know, he was getting knocked out the week before a fight and still having to fight anyway, or, you know, choosing to fight anyway and signing up for fights that maybe he shouldn't, and really tough physical training, Chuck Liddell knockouts. Chuck Liddell rematch where he got knocked out again. And so, look at those guys. Don't be that guy. Look at Krokop having, you know, fits in the back. Get out. You've made a lot of money. You've made a lot of memories. You've been in some of the best fights of all time, Rory McDonald. It's okay to step aside when it's time to step aside. And I feel for the guy because that's a really big decision. Speaking of stepping aside, Jesse, Manny Pacquiao still not stepping aside. He is going to fight Keith Thurman. Did we talk about this last week?
Yes, we did. Last week was a rumor. This week it is reality.
So he is fighting Keith Thurman July 20th on Fox pay-per-view.
Very interesting fight. I think this is the best fight Manny Pacquiao could do, and I don't count him out on this fight at all. I think he has a huge possibility to win this fight. Keith Thurman didn't necessarily look that good in his last fight. I've heard many people from the gyms and in his interviews, it kind of seems like he's rich, he's in love, he's in a good place in his life. He isn't necessarily the killer that we had 5 years ago. And, you know, this is the best time to fight him. Did he come up after that last fight? Did the hunger, did that fire burn once again inside of him to fight? Or was that just exposing the fact that it's gone? Manny Pacquiao still has that hunger. And even though he's been able to accomplish a lot of things, he has a great singing career, which you laugh at, but still, he's sold a lot of records. He's got a great political career. He's done a lot of fantastic stuff to be a great ambassador for the Philippines and a crossover celebrity. He's a huge deal, still produces in the ring, still has that hunger, still has the desire. And being over 40 years old, does Keith Thurman still have what he has inside of him to compete with this absolute once-in-a-lifetime athlete?
He lost to Jeff Horn. I'm not making that up. He lost to Jeff Horn.
But Manny Pacquiao was pulled to come back from them.
Yeah, but he lost to Jeff Horn. Listen, I hear you that Manny Pacquiao is obviously a once-in-a-generation talent, and he should be given every respect as such. Keith Thurman had a very tough fight with Josecito Lopez, which is not a guy that you want to have a tough fight with when you're trying to be the number one guy in the world. But I think Josecito is underrated. And I think this is still a very strong fight for Keith Thurman. I think Keith Thurman is being matched up well here. If he still is that number one guy, fighting a guy like Manny Pacquiao, where he will have a big speed advantage and he'll have a little bit of a natural size advantage, he won't have a power advantage for sure. But his size will be good here. The girth,
but
Jesse.
Manny Pacquiao has beaten Matisse by knockout, and he outboxed Adrian Broner in his two fights since the Jeff Horn loss.
I feel you. The Matisse one is good. Matisse isn't as good as Thurman, and Adrian Broner is Adrian Broner. So, you know, there's ways around it. They're not the same guy. Adrian Broner fucks up a lot more than Keith Thurman does. Whereas Keith Thurman is in love, Adrian Broner is a retarded person. So they're just kind of like off in their own little areas. Jesse, we've been wondering if we were going to be able to find a fight for one Anthony Joshua, and we have. And it is one journeyman Andy Ruiz has stepped up, and he'll be the one taking on the great British beat off Anthony Joshua.
You That's know, the new nickname, the great Andy British Ruiz beat off. A journeyman.
I mean, he's at least journeyman adjacent, right?
I mean, he's pulled together some great victories.
Yes, he has a fantastic career. I don't mean that to diminish him. There's some amazing journeymen out there.
He's beaten some great people. I mean, he's beaten some people past their prime. Leahovich, Ray Austin, Kevin Johnson. Why are people still fighting Kevin Johnson? Like, this dude was, like, past his prime, I think, in, like, 2003. But still, heavyweights will still be, like, knocked out Kevin Johnson. And it's like, can we stop knocking out Kevin Johnson? We talked about CTE before. Like, he's had enough.
Yeah, we mentioned Babalu. No way is that guy going to be able to, like, for sure that guy writes down where he parks his car when he shows up to the venue, right?
Yeah, but he had a great fight against Joseph Parker. Joseph Parker, he gave him all the good handle. I mean, even though he's fat, he looks like fluffy. He looks like the guy who sleeps with Miguel Cotto behind his wife's back, literally.
That guy is a favorite on this podcast, by the way. That guy, just the fact that he exists, just the fact that, like, Canelo's fuck toy is a thing, like, really, like, lights up the podcast. Kodos, yeah. No, Pacquiao's fuck boy, that's fine. Yeah, I don't care. Because I love that everybody, and even you did it, where you were like, yeah, he's only painted, positive, lights for the Filipino people. Before Manny Pacquiao, I didn't realize Filipino people fucking hated gays this much. It isn't all like nice shit that Manny Pacquiao brings with him. I think people need to realize that. Now they have Duterte, who fucking is like, I could do a whole show on Duterte.
What did Pacquiao say about gay people? Didn't?
Oh man, it was some. I wish I had the quote right in front of me. What was it? I beat their asses all night long, something like that. They're never able to say something
mild, like, I don't agree with it, but it's up to them, but who am I to judge, or something like that.
Check his voting record if you believe that's the case. How about that? Because this new guy's ran in, and he's talked about, we don't even have time to get into it, Jesse. Does Manny Pacquiao love gay people? If you sent Manny Pacquiao that photo of that dude, what do you think he would say? He would KO that ass, right? He'd drop that fucking big right hook. So we have the Pacquiao fight. We have the Andy Ruiz fight. Anything else on Andy Ruiz versus AJ?
No. You know what? I think it'll be a fun fight while it lasts. But I think AJ's bigger, stronger, faster, more talented in his prime.
Overall, it's kind of the fight they had to make, right? Of the fights they could have made, this is one of the better ones.
Yeah, I think it's the best of the choices.
Ruiz has a pulse. You know, there's a lot of pulseless guys that I feared they might get. I thought we might get another Safari main event fight. But, Andrew Ruiz has a pulse. That'll be a little better. Looking ahead to this weekend, somebody that has a pulse that I don't think enough people are giving credit to, Jesse, Artur Beterbiev is back in action. He is taking on a very tough, explosive Kolajic. Is that how we're saying this? I've seen this guy fight. I can't believe I don't remember how to say his
name. I'm only calling him Hot Rod.
Hot Rod. Hot Rod is taking on Beterbiev in a battle of Eastern European sluggers. This one has a ton of power. Coming to you live from Stockton for the IBF title at light heavyweight. Beterbiev is being talked about as one of these guys who's really starting to carve out a legacy for himself. He's -1,000 here in this fight. Hot Rod is +600. I think this Hot Rod kid is a real, real live underdog. He did lose to Marcus Brown, but Marcus Brown is very good. He's picked up...
That was a controversial loss from all I keep
reading.
Split
decision. Very close. Split decision. Very close, Jesse. Could have gone either way. This kid is a hammer, and he is in a very tough fight. He's in here at +600. I think he's a Bosnian kid. I might throw a couple bucks on a Bosnian kid at +600, Jesse. I think he's that tough.
Yeah, from all accounts, he seems tough. I saw some highlights from the Marcus Brown fight because I kept reading about how he should have won that fight. And actually, he created kind of a dark horse kind of underground following where people follow him to fights. He sells tickets. It's very rare to find fighters who aren't on the major networks who sell tickets. He sells tickets after that fight. So I didn't get to see the whole fight. I saw highlights. And from the highlights that I saw, he doesn't necessarily have the best hand speed. He's a good boxer. He's tricky. He knows how to set traps. But it's going to be a little bit hard with Beterbiev in this fight, how he's going to deal with the power. In the opening rounds of the Marcus Brown fight, he got dropped. So that's Marcus Brown hitting you. I could only imagine how he's going to take the punches from Beterbiev.
I agree 100%. But at +600, that's a real enticing pick.
Very enticing pick.
Jesse, we got to talk about the boxing fight of the weekend. The fight of the weekend, easily. We've been looking forward to it. We've been saying for a long time this is a really dangerous fight, and this is a really desired fight in this division. Coming to us on DAZN, probably the biggest fight we've seen on DAZN yet. I feel very comfortable in saying. Canelo Alvarez is defending all the belts, all the balls, against Danny Jacobs here at 160. Jesse, this is a big marquee fight. Danny Jacobs is a pound-for-pound level guy. Canelo is a pound-for-pound top five guy in most lists. This is a hell of a fight. What do you think?
Bigger, stronger, faster, better amateur background. We're talking about the miracle man, Danny Jacobs, his advantages going into this fight. I'm kind of surprised that that line isn't a little bit closer. You have Canelo as a minus 453 and Danny Jacobs as a +378. Those are some pretty big odds for a guy who has the reach advantage, the size advantage, the speed advantage. Maybe he doesn't have the power advantage, but man, does he have incredible power. When you look at the first fight with Canelo versus Triple G, I know the boxing math doesn't actually work, but if we were to do it, let's say hypothetically we did the boxing math, anyone who saw that fight, most people who saw that fight saw Triple G lay the beat down on Canelo. When we saw Danny Jacobs versus Triple G, that was a 50-50 fight where you could make a damn good argument that Danny Jacobs won that fight.
I remember at the time, I remember when that last bell sounded, I remember thinking, oh no, we just fucked up Canelo Triple G. I remember thinking, yeah. Oh no, we had this big fight and now that's not going to be here anymore. Even though I'm happy for Danny Jacobs, and I'm happy that we get to see Danny Jacobs in this spot now, I think he's a super live underdog against Canelo. Something I like that he does is when people go to the body, especially when Triple G was going to the body, Danny Jacobs was able to answer and make him pay for a lot of those attempts. And if you're able to slow down Canelo's body work, I think that's a huge, huge factor in this fight. If Jacobs can move in and out, the more he can do that effectively, the more it's going to help him for sure. And anytime he's inside, he's got to be able to tie Canelo up, get him to a rope, lean on him for a second, use that clinch to his advantage. Because if he stays in that brawling distance, I think Canelo is going to be able to put together effective combinations and good-looking combinations. Canelo, for all the talk about the judges love to give him fights, he plays to the judges. He lands big combinations that light up around and really resonate as well. I think that's important to mention. Do you think this fight is in danger of getting pulled by the judges? Because that's kind of been the thing with these Canelo fights.
That's actually a funny meme that I saw. So it showed a scorecard of Danny Jacobs winning maybe 8 rounds or 9 rounds in the fight. But then the tally at the bottom shows 118 Canelo, 110 Danny Jacobs.
Yeah, however you gotta funny. Get there,
They were like, the scorecard is like scorecards leaked for this weekend. Yeah, that's actually been the thing, but it's one of those things that's always existed.
Here on Joe and Jesse Explain Memes.
So it's one of those things that's always existed in boxing where the marquee fighter always gets the benefit of the doubt. I feel like the same thing happens in MMA, but to a lesser extent. But I tend to argue that if Khabib and Conor McGregor would have gone to a scorecard, I think Conor would have won a controversial decision. I mean, the major player always gets the benefit of the doubt, especially in Vegas.
It could be. There's something to that. We've seen Canelo definitely pick up some real shady work. And we've seen Danny Jacobs really drop some heartbreakers. Flat out, Canelo has elite wins. Danny Jacobs really doesn't have that same ledger.
Danny Jacobs has one of the most... You know, we said this last week that, you know, facts tell, stories sell. Danny Jacobs right now is in a position to become one of the biggest stars in boxing. His story is one of those crossover type stories that even if you're not a fan of boxing, you could 100% relate. I love seeing the countdown show where he explains the moment that he calls the greatest moment of his life, which was when he got cancer, when he got bone cancer, and they told him he would never walk again. Here was a guy who in the amateurs was considered one of the greatest American prospects. He becomes ESPN Prospect of the Year, and he starts feeling a little bad coming into a fight. He gets upset and knocked out in his first fight, goes to the doctor, finds out he has bone cancer. He will never be able to walk again. Boxing becomes an impossibility for him. Not only does he make it back, when he goes through the surgery, they tell him he has a 40% chance of surviving the surgery. So he beats the odds. He survives the surgery. Underdog. Pulls the upset. They said he'll never walk again. His wife just gave birth. He has to learn how to walk to be able to take care of his kid. He has a kid to take care of. He can't just not work. He doesn't have insurance. He doesn't have anything. So he overcomes the odds, starts walking. He does it in a way where his little son doesn't even realize there's something bad happening. He just thinks dad's being dad. He keeps a calm, cool demeanor and doesn't bring any stress to his friends and family while he's overcoming the odds. Goes into the gym. They said he'll never box again. Trains himself. Comes back. Wins a world title. Fights against one of the most devastating knockout punchers on the planet with Kid Chocolate, Peter Quillin, who's knocking out everyone, knocks him out in the first round, makes his way back up to the elite fights. Even though he's in the wrong promotional company, still crosses over companies to be able to fight against Triple G and Canelo. It's already a miracle. They call him the Miracle Man for a reason. If he could pull an upset, this is a huge, huge, huge star in boxing on the rise.
It'll be one of the most remarkable stories in all of sports modern day, straight up. There's no way around it. Hard not to root for Danny Jacobs, and it's a little hard to root for Canelo. You know, I understand that, you know, he's always going to have such strong support in the Mexican community, the Mexican boxing community, but it's so easy to root for the guy overcoming cancer versus the rich golden boy kid, you know?
Well, Canelo has a fantastic story as well.
He does, but it's not Danny Jacobs good.
Here he is, a poor kid, gets a girl pregnant when he's a teenager, has to go turn pro at 14 to be able to provide for his daughter. And then we see one of the greatest rises of a Mexican boxer of all time. 15 years old, turns pro, beats guys, you know, as a teenager, beating guys like Miguel Vasquez, who was one of the dominant figures in his weight class for many years. Comes to the U.S., knocks out Carlos Baldomir, who was the unified, undisputed champion until he lost the title to Floyd Mayweather, beats Matthew Hatton, comes in, moves up in weight, fights against, wins the light middleweight championship, beats Miguel Cotto for the middleweight championship of the world at the tender age of 22 years old, fights a huge pay-per-view bout against arguably the greatest boxer of all time, Floyd Money Mayweather Jr., in a mega, 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 mega blockbuster fight, one of the highest paid fights in the history of the entire sport. I mean, we see a complete outlier who has signature victories over Alfredo Angulo when that was a fight, Arislandi Lara, James Kirkland, Amir Khan, the luckiest boxer alive, Liam Smith. He beats Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. to cement his name as the number one figure in Mexican boxing in this generation, and then two mega fights with Triple G, and of course moves up another weight class and wins a world title at super middleweight. That's a fantastic career. That's a stellar Hall of Fame career, and he's not even 30 years old.
He's unbelievable. He's a total phenom. But fucking without a condom and getting a girl pregnant and getting bone cancer and coming back and winning a world championship are two different things.
Do you know Canelo is?
Do I know what?
Do you know how old Canelo is now?
Canelo's like 28?
Yes. He's done all this and he's only 28 years old.
It's crazy, man. Old enough to be a grandfather. True, though. Jesse, let's get down to brass tacks. What's the fight going to look like?
Man, so...
What's it going to look like and what's the prediction is what I'm asking, really.
I got Danny Jacobs winning this fight. Danny Jacobs is one of those fighters where if they did a rehydration clause, no way he makes the weight. Oh, they have the rehydration clause?
Yes. There's a rehydration clause.
That's going to be an interesting play because when he comes into the fights, he is clearly a light heavyweight. He is a giant.
He's a cruiserweight. Are you shitting me? He's enormous.
He's huge.
He ain't making 175. Are you out of your mind? He's enormous. Yeah, he's got hollow bones, Jesse. That's what's going on. His bones are hollow. We've heard that said about so many. Oh, he must have hollow bones. I don't know the nature of his injury, but that is a real possibility here that we need to recognize.
You know, when I see these guys next to each other, it always makes me question, you know, Canelo's allegedly 5'9 and a half. And I would say that with quotation marks, because if Danny Jacobs is only 5'11", you know, that's about...
Which I believe, because why wouldn't you lie and say you're 6 foot? If you're going to go 5'11 as a lie, you would just go 6 foot as a lie, you know?
As someone who's 5'11".
Yes.
Yeah, so this is a huge gap.
Allegedly.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's like an inch and a half difference. No, it looks like it's several inches difference. Like, he's legitimately bigger. I would say Canelo in real life is maybe closer to 5'8 or 5'7 and a half. That size difference just, it doesn't match up to me.
And listen, man, that inch and a half, maybe, you know, it doesn't look like a lot to the eye, but it brings so much more oomph, you know, ask anybody.
It reminds me of those memes of when, like,
Jesse, explaining memes. I'm going to get a fucking audio drop for that.
When they're, like, in a woman's eyes, and it's, like, you know, Jamie Lannister, and it's, like, 6 foot, and then it's, like, Tyrion Lannister, and it's, like, 5'10".
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what it looks like. It's, like, it's ridiculous. It's, like, there's no way that's the actual size difference. Speed difference. You know, if you look at the actual amateur pedigree of Danny Jacobs, which is always underlooked coming into these fights, this is the reason why I actually picked him to beat Triple G on this podcast leading into that fight when he was a massive underdog. He's a very underrated boxer. He's not just speed and power. He's a damn good boxer. He knows how to set up traps. He knows how to use his power properly. I would 100% say that Canelo has the power advantage going into this fight. But it's not like Danny Jacobs hasn't produced some of the most epic knockouts. I mean, he's a great knockout puncher.
He absolutely is. Both these guys, they're actually really similar in a lot of ways, man. But we got to name a prediction. Jesse, I'm going to go out on a limb here. Give me Danny Jacobs, 12 rounds.
I'm taking Danny Jacobs.
No shit. God damn, I thought we were going to split on one for sure. And no, here we are. I don't know why. I'm not saying it's the smart pick, but god damn if I don't think Danny Jacobs is going to win this fight.
You should do a parlay with your guy, Hot Rod and Danny Jacobs.
Yo, I'll pay rent for a fucking year off that. That would be sweet. Yeah. Jesse, before we get to this last fight to break down, something we forgot in the show topics that I want to bring up right here, because we just mentioned his name a whole bunch. Triple G and Abel Sanchez are splitting, and it is drama. So,
big drama show.
I know. So Triple G is in a situation where he is making quite a lot of money every single fucking fight. And Abel Sanchez and him still have a contract where Abel Sanchez is still getting that 10%, which is customary for fighters that are coming up. Now, for a lot of good fighters, they have a cap on that where the trainer can only earn so much. Triple G doesn't have that. He asked, reportedly, he asked Abel Sanchez to take an 80% cut to what he was making.
Wow.
And he, you know, I think he said that thinking there's no way he's going to take that. He was right. And so him and Abel Sanchez have split amicably. I think it's easy to kind of see where both guys are coming from here. Triple G is saying, well, he's not adding millions of dollars worth of value to me, so I'm kind of wasting my money signing it over to him. Also, I came to him when I was a 30-year-old Olympic champion. It's not like he built me from the ground up. You know, he kind of just supervises my training. On the other hand, you know, Abel Sanchez can say, I have this contract. I am his trainer. This is what we've agreed to. And to go back on that is dirty play. Where do you fall on this?
Man, I feel like Triple G does have to do different things in order to improve himself at this stage in his career, given the two Canelo fights. I mean, if he had beaten Canelo better the second time, then, you know, he shouldn't necessarily change anything. But given the fact that, yeah, the second fight was closer, you are older, I think it might be time for a change. And I think this probably came at the right time for him. So being able to outprice Abel Sanchez, being able to move and just kind of take different looks, I think that this is actually going to benefit him in the long run. If there is a long run. I mean, he's getting older now, and he should probably be looking kind of for his last couple of marquee fights.
For sure. He's, you know, 37, then this doesn't last forever. I will say about, it's important to remember with Triple G and Abel Sanchez. When Triple G came to Abel Sanchez was literally about to retire and rent out his gym and send it around for people. Now he's got a ton of more fighters under his name. He's, you know, made a lot of money with Triple G. He's making a lot of money off of these guys that the prestige of having Triple G helped bring in. So, you know, Golovkin made a lot of money for Abel Sanchez. I don't think he can be mad. I think these athletes need to make their money when they can. And the trainer can always turn around and make somebody else if you're that good, you know?
You know what bugs me about this weight class is why does no one fight each other besides, like, the very top?
That's true. These fucking gatekeeper, like, they're not making new stars in this weight class.
Like, okay, you have Matt Korobov, which, to be fair, he's fighting whoever he can get. He's at the bottom of the totem pole. You have Kid Chocolate, who, okay, let's face it, he fought Caleb Truax, like he's doing his best. But you have guys like David Lemieux. You have guys like Rob Brandt, who has a title. He's a champion. He's a champion on DAZN. You have Demetrius Andrade, who's also on DAZN. He's also a DAZN fighter. You have Jamal Charlo, who, okay, given he's on the other side of the fence, but still, fight some of these guys. And you have Billy Joe Saunders. They should all be fighting each other. I feel like if one of those guys beat another one of those guys, they're the next one in line to fight for the title.
I agree, man. Let's say, you know, Triple G's nearing 40. Danny Jacobs is getting up there, especially if he loses this fight. Both those guys could drop off the map tomorrow. Canelo could move up in weight. Suddenly, you look at this weight, it's a little weak, Jesse, especially with Charlo kind of off on Charlo Island right now. It's a weak weight.
So Triple G's on his own. His options could have been Rob Brandt, could have won a title against Rob Brandt. He would be favored to beat Rob Brandt. He could have fought Demetrius Andrade, who's on the zone as well. Possibility of a Billy Joe Saunders fight. He's not on the zone, but that would be a pretty decent fight to make. Do you know who Triple G is fighting on his debut on the zone?
Rock me.
Stephen Rolls.
God.
Stephen Rolls, June 8th. A guy no one's ever heard of. This is about as bad a fight as you could possibly make. It's literally just Triple G's coming over and just going to beat the shit out of some guy.
It's his Rocky Fielding, right?
Yeah.
All due respect,
Rocky Fielding was a champion. That's a world champion.
Yeah, that's fair at least. At least there was some gold in it for him. Yeah, it's very stupid. Very, very stupid.
If he fought Rob Brandt, that would be his Rocky Fielding.
Jesse, last fight of the weekend that we're going to break down. In the main event coming to us from, where is this fight happening? Do you remember off the top of your head? Ottawa, Canada. Donald Cowboy Cerrone, one of the stars of the UFC that people don't talk about, is taking on Al Iaquinta in a battle of welterweight studs, welterweight guys who have kind of vacillated and moved between gatekeeper and contender in their career, right? And they kind of ping back and forth. Cerrone's coming off of two really big stoppage wins. He beat Mike Perry, Platinum Mike Perry, broke his arm in an armbar. He beat Alex Hernandez, who is an incredibly tough wrestle boxer who has a very bright future, I believe. Beat him with a head kick. That was beautiful. That was his return to lightweight. Al Iaquinta, meanwhile, kind of looks like he's leveled up recently. He was pretty much retired at one point. Then suddenly he beats...
He was selling real estate.
He was a real estate agent. He knocks out Diego Sanchez. He's scheduled to take on Paul Felder for UFC 223. He ends up in the main event against Khabib Nurmagomedov after a late-minute replacement. He takes Khabib to a five-round decision where he really pushes Khabib, gives a lot of meaningful resistance. And after that, he follows it up with a five-round decision win over top five in the world Kevin Lee, who he had actually beaten once before. You add that on in this run, he has also beaten Jorge Masvidal, he's beaten Joe Lozon, he's beaten a bunch of really tough guys, and Al Iaquinta is really knocking on the door of getting himself another title shot somehow. He's a really tough guy. Donald Cerrone, also a really tough guy, but I feel like Al Iaquinta is the favorite coming into this, and it's for a reason. He looks so good lately, Jesse.
He's a very slight favorite in this fight. He's a
-123. I thought he would be a lot higher.
Yeah, it's an incredibly close fight in many people's eyes. Iaquinta, he kind of has the style that Donald Cerrone is usually very successful against. Styles make fights, and he's a smaller guy who tends to walk into, fighters who fight like him tend to walk into Donald Cerrone's kicks. The leg kicks, he's really prepared for them, but he's on this hot streak right now. Like you said, he's beaten guys like Jorge Masvidal. You see the streak Masvidal's currently on. That's a very good win. Kevin Lee, fantastic streak right now. He beat Kevin Lee in a very, very good fight. They got to show a good, well-rounded skill set from Iaquinta. We got to see him beat Diego Sanchez, a guy who you've written off so many times, who just recently beat Mickey Gall.
Fair.
A lot of guys who put together some great wins. Iaquinta look good since his comeback. And I kind of feel this is kind of like the Cinderella Man story. Do you remember the Cinderella story about Jimmy Broderick?
Where
he was this great prospect, but he had to leave the sport for a period of time. And during that time period, his injuries healed. And when he came back, he upset the world champion at the time and became Max Baer and pulled one of the greatest upsets of that time. That's kind of a similar story that Iaquinta almost pulled off when he had that iconic fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov. He had an opportunity where all those injuries that he had during his career started healing. He had been selling real estate. He was out of the sport, came back with a healthier body, and he's been able to produce some great victories.
He's looked so fantastic. I think he's also a guy who right now does believe he can be world champion. Do you think Donald Cerrone really believes he can be world champion anymore? He had that streak where he had 4 losses in like 5 fights. I mean, you know, I think he's kind of read the writing on the wall, especially, you know, he's dropping back down to lightweight, I think, just to try to draw out a couple more fun fights. He does have a style to do well here against Iaquinta, but I think Iaquinta is tough enough to put that pressure on. In Cerrone, we've seen him just, you know, wilt under that pressure so many times.
Cerrone, I don't know what it is, man. He couldn't even be the WEC champion, man. Like, he's always right on the door, and then he loses. You know, he had a great streak, beat a lot of great people. He beat Razor Rob McCullum back when that was a big name. And then loses to Jamie Varner, just to split, just 1%. He loses to Jamie Varner.
Do you remember in that fight, too? He was in the 5th round. He hit a downed knee to Jamie Varner that fucked up Jamie Varner's eye really badly. So he could have lost that fight. He ended up going to the scorecards. Thank God, you know, at least he had a shot on the scorecards. Could have been a DQ. Could have ended it right there. He's in the 5th round of a title fight. He knees the guy in the head when his both knees are on the mat. Jesse, come on, this guy. But that was a long time ago.
I mean, the two Benson Henderson fights for the title, the two times, the only times he lost outside of the UFC was when they were for the WEC title. That's kind of been his trajectory. He's been able to beat everyone but when he gets against Anthony Pettis, he loses to Pettis with this like crazy KO kick in the 1st round. When he fights against Rafael Dos Anjos, ends up getting ragdolled. I don't think that was actually for the title, but he still ends up getting ragdolled.
No, they did. They fought twice. One time was for the title. And he's a guy who does so much worse in rematches, Jesse. I know he ended up beating Benson in their 3rd fight, but in their 1st fight, they have a total war, back and forth, 5 rounds for the title, ends up losing. In the 2nd fight, he gets choked out in like 1.5 minutes, doesn't have any offense. RDA, same goddamn thing. 1st fight, RDA is able to take him down a bunch of times. RDA is able to, you know, kind of control the fight, do well on the feet. 2nd fight, Dos Anjos lands 1 fucking body kick. They're done in 1 minute for the UFC lightweight championship. This guy does worse on rematches. That's not good. And now he's coming in. Since he lost that UFC title fight, he lost 4 times, 2 of them by knockout. He's, you know, piecing together these wins against these lower level guys, but Alex Hernandez is not beating top 10 guys right now. Mike Perry is not beating top 10 guys right now. Yancy Medeiros, who's very tough, not beating top 10 guys right now. So I just feel like there's a level of competition and success difference between these two.
I agree. You know, MMA math doesn't work, but Masvidal versus Cowboy was a knockout for Cowboy. I mean, it was a knockout on Cowboy. Masvidal versus Iaquinta is Iaquinta winning that fight. So in terms of Cerrone, a guy that we know is generally a striking genius, the fact that I think it's comparable. I think you have Iaquinta being able to hang in there in a striking capacity with Donald Cerrone.
I feel like people are a little too quick, honestly, these days to kind of discount the, like, that matters. Levels matter. And Iaquinta knocked out the guy who knocked out the guy. And we have to pay attention to that. And I think that does have some bearing here. Especially for, you know, Cowboy and Iaquinta are very emotional fighters. I think they both know that coming into this weekend. I think Iaquinta is going to walk right through him. What do you think?
I think it's going to be a very close, tough fight, but I think Iaquinta is going to outgrind him. I think he's going to put him in bad positions. I think he's going to ask a lot of questions from him. There'll be a lot of questions asked for Iaquinta, but I feel like his mindset is ready, and I think he will win this fight.
His body is ready, Jesse. Ready to go fuck that trans woman. Do you have anything else for the week?
That's it for me. Follow me on social media, Jay Rivas on Instagram. Sorry, Jay Rivas Comedy on Instagram and Jay Rivas on Facebook.
Please subscribe to the show. Please find the show. Please do all that stuff for the show. We really appreciate it. Give us a 5-star rating. For everybody out there, we'll be back next week right here on The Fighter's Block.